This week's episode of Ear Biscuits is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio.
You know, I think I'm going to be using Squarespace to use our URL, Internet Peanut Butter. It's been redirecting to rentlink.com, but I think we need to change it and make it go to just peanut butter type stuff.
Do you want to start selling peanut butter?
I don't know. I'm gonna tool around with it.
Okay, you look into that. In the meantime, I'll let them know that they can try out Squarespace for free without even entering in their credit card information. And then once they're convinced that they want to actually go forward with this whole thing, make sure you get 10% off by using the offer code RANDL.
So you can visit internetpeanutbutter.com and it'll just redirect to RentLink because I haven't done it yet. I got to carve out the time. But you should also immediately go to squarespace.com, use offer code RNL.
Now it's time for an Ear Biscuit.
Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. It's time for another conversation with someone interesting from the internet.
At the round table of dim lighting this week, we have Brittany Louise Taylor. That's BLT, not the sandwich, but the YouTuber extraordinaire, music video spoofs, vlogging, all types of stuff.
We talked to her about her bouts with bullying growing up, how she took on Hollywood at the young age of 19.
And the unconventional method she employed to build her YouTube channel. Unconventional. You won't believe how many videos she watched in her first year on YouTube. Watched, not made.
Astounding. Speaking of astounding, I had what they called the confused burrito for dinner tonight.
I was there. I heard you order it, and I was confused.
Well, there's this.
Is that why it's called Confused Burrito?
No. Well, there's this Mexican restaurant not too far from us. Well, that's not saying a lot. We're in Los Angeles. But this is probably the closest Mexican restaurant to our studio, and we've never been. And we decided to go to it. Nice atmosphere, by the way. It was kind of like a Disney World restaurant on the inside. Like doors to nowhere, windows to nowhere.
Well, yeah. Barrels with nothing in them.
Yeah. I loved it. No animatronics, though. But I always go for the special.
What were the barrels? Is that like casks of
whiskey, tequila?
Tequila.
Yeah. I always go for the specials. You know, I mean, I'm the guy, I get the McRib when the McRib comes back.
The grass is always greener for you.
Yeah. And I mean, if the chef has taken the time to do something a little bit different, I'm going to take a chance with him, even if I don't know him.
And it is a chance. That's my perspective. If the chef is trying something new, that's what he calls a special. This is especially new to me. It might be especially bad to you.
Well, it was called the Confused Burrito, and it had
Great name, by the way.
Chili Colorado, which is beef and red sauce on one side, and then it had salsa verde on the other side, and that was pork and green sauce. And I was like, it's like a Christmas burrito. That was pretty exciting to me. And I got it, but what was really confusing to me is why I finished it.
Now, listen, they bring this thing out. Now, I just ordered the carnitas.
Can't go wrong with that.
No. They had guacamole.
It's like the barbecue of Mexico.
Give me the carnitas, hold the tomatoes. Brought it out. It looked great. I looked over at Rhett's plate, and the burrito was so big, and it looked like someone, like a doctor, had operated, pulled like the largest organ out of a very huge animal and put it on a hot plate. I mean, it had a couple of different color sauces, and it looked fleshy.
It was huge. No, it looked incredible. I mean,
it just looked like a burrito with two colors.
But here's the deal. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it was. But I've always, always, without exception, finished everything on my plate.
Well, the thing that knowing this about you, the thing that I said to Rhett, people, was before he started eating, I said, can you picture everything that's on that huge plate inside of you a few minutes from now? I mean, is that even possible?
And I answered you, not only can I picture it, but I will make it happen right here in front of you. You will picture it. You will see a movie of it right now.
Gosh.
You just watch me do it.
See a movie of it.
And I did it. I did it. That's what, you know, that's what hanging out with me is like. It's like constantly being at a movie. I ate it, and I am beginning to regret that. Well, I've already regretted it three times. I've had to take three.
Okay, okay.
Three breaks.
Yeah. Well, I got you. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I am really sorry. Dick, if you, you know, if you have to stop by, I'm not going to say the name of the restaurant. But
so many conversations here are bathroom related.
No, hey, you don't know what I was talking about.
No, I don't.
Just don't order the confused burrito because it will confuse your body.
That's why they call it that. It's just the sheer volume of it confused your body, man. You need portion control, dude. You should have cut it right down that part. The demarcation between the red sauce and the green sauce should have been the place where you cut that thing in half, and then you could have had half for later.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't have been a two-tone experience. It would have been red or green. I wanted red and green.
Well, it's interesting, in segueing to Brittany Louise Taylor, there is this confused burrito nature to her start on YouTube. See what I mean by that?
Wow. Okay.
Maybe it involved a character of a different sauce, and then her of a different sauce a little bit later. I don't know. Just see if the analogy fits as we get into this conversation.
Here it is, our ear biscuit with Brittany Louise Taylor.
No, I shot a Hunger Games parody yesterday, and I was at the beach in, like, Katniss costume, and, like, everyone was laughing at me because I'm, like, singing because there was, like, there's a couple fart jokes, and so I had to listen. So I was let's sing these lyrics in this Katniss costume with a bow and arrow. And I ran into, you know, Keep the Heat. I ran into him. He's like, oh, hey.
Really?
It was out in Malibu, like, in the middle of nowhere, like, this beach. Only in L.A.
Were you at the El Matador Beach?
Yeah.
That's the beach.
That's the beach. Okay, I didn't know
about
that.
We shot on that beach too.
Okay, because I needed just a good location. So.
Well, it's like the One Direction.
I didn't know
you
that.
You don't know you're beautiful.
That's our
beach,
that was the
right?
beach,
isn't it?
I think so. But you'll see it in a lot of videos where it's okay. We need a beach with like a rock
that has a hole underneath that looks like kind of like Hawaii. something. Yeah.
Yeah. So we shot our. Rub some bacon on it there.
And there's always something going on down there because when we were down there, there was a guy shooting a model, a bikini model on the beach. And we were like, you know what? She was in the background of our robot shot.
Yeah.
And we were like, you know what? Let's just leave this.
She had on a thong. We've never had a thong in any
You've
of our videos.
You've never had cheeks in the videos.
And this was not
no
a cover.
Butt cheeks.
This was not a cover of the thong song, which we've considered doing many times. But this particular time, it was an original song.
Like that song is so old, dude. Nobody even knows what that song thong. Is.
They know what it is. They did. No, because I did a video on my second channel with Andre. I think we had some sugar and we were just like laughing. So we're like, we didn't even know the lyrics and we were just like both going back and forth and like, dong, 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 dong. Can't handle it. And he was like, I'm like, scandalous. So I was like, just knew like one word in every line that he was singing. It was brilliant.
So have you ever had butt cheeks in one of your videos?
No, I think I've had
yours or anybody else's.
Well, I mean, I've had pants super tight, but you probably, it probably leaves little to the imagination.
Super tight pants.
Yeah. Like in the Katniss video we just shot, I was like, whoa, okay. They're like Lululemon pants. And like, leaves nothing to the imagination. Like you can see the cheeks in all their glory. Like,
right. Isn't that what the big controversy is about?
About their pants. Yeah. They are. They're a little, I didn't use a lot of butt shots. So.
Okay. You kept it tasteful.
I did.
Okay.
I tried to.
We kept the butt shots at a long distance.
But if you click on the actual girl in the background during that video.
You guys put an annotation?
It brings up a hidden annotation of her walking with the robot. But we actually did ask her, to put a shirt on.
Well, she wasn't topless.
She wasn't topless, but we were like, you know what? If a 2-year-old is out there watching this video and happens to accidentally click on this,
was it like a little Easter egg then?
We had a bunch of them in that video. Anyway.
Okay. It was really funny. We kept trying to frame out this guy because we wanted to shoot towards the water, but there's this guy that was scuba diving in for lobster. So you keep seeing his fins come up and then like him come up and dive back down. So you're trying to frame out the lobster guy. So,
I told you about this. You could just go dive off of the coast of Malibu, and you could just get lobsters.
Wow.
He caught like 6 of them.
Now, were his butt cheeks exposed?
No. We saw a lot of fin. Lots and lots of fin. Yeah.
Not a lot of
gratuitous,
fin.
Not a lot of
gratuitous fin.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, like, I had a lot of people, because you know at that beach they have, like, you know, the upper where, like, the stairs are, there's like a mountain. Well, there's like everyone kept sitting up there and watching us. We started to get like this crowd of like people, like, what is she doing? Because I have this bow and arrow and I'm like lip syncing to these lyrics.
Now, here's the age old question though. Did you get a permit?
No. I can't afford permits.
Of course, we didn't either. I mean, I've talked to many people who have shot at El Matador and no one's ever gotten a permit. One Direction probably did, though.
I know. I think that I don't know. I mean, and I don't even know. I'm one of those people, like, I just fly by the seat of my pants and, like, film in different places. And if we get in trouble, we go somewhere else.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know?
Go
and I'm always super polite and I'm super, exactly. I'm always super polite and I'm super nice. And the only time that I got in trouble a little bit, we were filming at the old zoo in Griffith Park. And uh-huh. I didn't know that that's like heavily patrolled by the rangers. Because,
and it's haunted by the ghosts of animals.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know this. I didn't get that like creepy vibe. Just,
well, that's
like,
good. You weren't haunted. You just were approached by a ranger.
Just approached by a ranger, and I had a pink wig on and this like floral, like full floral costume. And he was like, "You can't be filming here, blah blah. Do you have a permit?" But we just ended up going up the street and like running and filming in the bushes, or like we just like ran away. But I got what I needed before he kicked us out.
Oh yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I was going to bring it back to butt cheeks one more time, but instead of doing that, why don't we just go back to your backstory and not your backside?
Okay, not the backside, just the backstory.
Where are you from?
I'm from Sedona, Arizona. Well, I moved when I was 1.5. My brother is really allergic to mosquitoes. So he used to blow up like a balloon. And like in Minnesota, where we're from, it's like the Minnesota. It's like the national birds. So like there's mosquitoes everywhere.
So we're in Minnesota?
St. Paul.
St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. Twin cities.
Well, no, one of the twin cities.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can't have one without the other.
Been there before. Now, your laughter sounds like
a machine gun. That's, it's a genetic thing. My brother does it too. It only happens for like, now I'm like totally self-conscious about it. It happens.
No, it's great.
It happens randomly and we call it the machine gun
thing.
Can
you do it again?
Like, but that's me trying, but like, it's when I think something's really funny that it usually comes out. I either squeal or I machine gun.
It's a little frightening.
Not both at the same time.
No.
Okay, so you and your brother do that. Are you also allergic to mosquitoes?
I'm not. He is.
So you got that gene, but not the other gene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Machine gun laughter is both of us, and the mosquitoes. I the bugs always liked Blake. He's the one that if we go camping, Blake's my older brother. So if we go camping, he's the one that gets eaten alive in 2 seconds and is covered with like lotion.
I mean, so this was so serious that it required
a relocation. He literally would blow up like just his whole body. He was just allergic. So, and he was just a toddler, and my brother was 17 months older than me. So he was 3 at the time, and I was 1.5. And my mom's like, well, the two places we could go to were New Mexico or Arizona for like not a ton of mosquitoes. So we looked into New Mexico first.
What is she doing? Like talking to, how do you find this out? Is it?
I think that, I don't even know how you find that. Cause
you
that
go
was
to
like
the
before.
Library.
Yeah, exactly. That was before internet. Sure. That was probably word of mouth. I'm sure now you could probably go on Google and put like, you know, cities without mosquitoes. But I think it was just probably, yeah, a lot of word of mouth. And they wanted like a small community, someplace to raise us that would be safe. And
so what were your parents doing at the time?
Oh, My parents were so funny. My dad was an airline pilot and my mom was a flight attendant. And
really?
When they met on the plane, my mom would have never dated him. She didn't know that he was an airline pilot because they were notorious players. This is like back in like the catch me if you can kind of days where like pilots, the moment they came on the plane, the wedding rings like came off, you know, that whole thing. And all the women, like my mom used to have to be like weighed in. Like you couldn't be 5 like pounds over your weight. Your nails had to be perfect. Like all the women were gorgeous. Like that was like the actresses of her day. Like everyone wanted to be a flight attendant. So she was just
literally, they were weighed in.
Literally you come in and if you were 5 pounds over your weight limit, you could not fly.
Well, you do need to be able to fit in the middle aisle. I mean, I'm just, you know, that should be the realistic limit. It shouldn't be
exactly
a mass thing. It should be a volume thing.
Yeah, but she had to literally get notes from her doctor because, like, she was allergic to nail polish. Our whole family has allergies. So she couldn't wear it. And so she had to have, like, bring a note with her and bring it with her to every check-in or else she wouldn't be allowed to fly because her nails were painted. Yeah, it was
I do
crazy.
Not, I do not accept service from flight attendants that did not
have their nails painted.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you would have not liked my mom. So they met on a plane just as passengers. And she said they were dating for 2 months before she asked him, like, well, what do you do? She said, he's like, I'm a pilot. She's like, no, you don't. You're not a pilot. I don't date pilots. So he had to go get his uniform to, like, prove it to her. But they were married. And my mom was still working for a while when she had me. So I think when we moved to Arizona, she was still flying. But then she decided she wanted to be home with the kids. It was too hard.
But they were able to just pick up and move somewhere else because of the way that the flight industry worked.
It's pretty easy because you just have to be near a major city that you can be based. Like my dad worked for Northwest. So like there are certain places like St. Paul was a base and like Phoenix was like a main station. Okay. It just had to be someplace that he could get to wherever else he needed to go. So there's certain cities that you had to live near. And so I think that's part of the reason they picked Arizona too, was that, you know, it was close to Phoenix, so like an hour and a half.
So your mom is allergic to nail polish.
Everything.
Your brother is, she's allergic to everything?
Everything. She like literally, she's the one like when we were in, like I was raised Catholic and then like we just like switched. It's so fun. Like now we're just like Christian. I don't know. She like, you know, in Catholic they have the incense. She'd be the one like just like hacking and her eyes streaming and have to run out when they do the incense down the aisles. Like uh-huh. We'd have to sit in back and she'd have to bring like allergy medication and like sneak out. She couldn't handle it.
She should have just channeled that into like a big emotion. Reaction and everybody would be like, look how spiritual that lady is.
That's you know? I've been healed. Well, I've been healed.
That's a charismatic church, not a Catholic church, in my understanding.
But, yeah. When you do that at the Catholic church, they kind of just look at you like, what's wrong with that lady?
You need to go to the Church of God. No,
you have to keep it in. Like, it's all about keeping it on the inside.
Right.
Live with your pain. No, but so, yeah, like our whole family has food issues. I don't know.
What do you have?
Me? I have tree nut. This is awful and I hate it. I have a tree nut allergy, like which means like I can't have like almonds,
Brazil
coconut,
nuts.
Any kind of nuts. And that sounds wrong. I love nuts. I do. I love like peanut butter. I love peanut butter.
It does is peanut butter a tree nut?
No, peanuts are actually a fungus, but like most people are, I know way too much about food.
Back up a second.
Yeah, peanuts are actually a fungus. They're not a nut. You didn't know that?
I thought they were a legume.
Oh, I don't know. I heard they're a fungus. That's when they have like the kind of like, what is it called?
You didn't know that? Well, I don't know. That's what you just said.
I know very little about this, but I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that I am almost positive that peanuts are not a fungus. We can't cheat. We cannot go on the internet during an ear biscuit, but I bet peanuts can get fungus.
No, I think that I've heard that they're a fungus.
I think if you spell legume backwards, it's kind of like fungus. No,
I think
that won't work either.
I think you're reaching.
I'm trying to help you out
so
here.
So you can't have almonds.
I can't have almonds.
Brazil nuts. You know about how they get Brazil nuts. Talk about a tree nut. I mean, this thing, the tree is just in the middle of the rainforest. And they don't grow them anywhere. And the
really?
Trees are like hundreds of years old. And they have these huge pods that if they fall, they will kill you. And they fall down and people collect them. And it's all, every Brazil nut that you eat in one of those packs of trail mix or wherever you get it, it was from some tree in the rainforest. It is not harvested like a normal thing. It is in a freaking rainforest.
Wow.
But you'll never know about that because you're allergic to them.
I will never know about that. And also, what is it? Is it macadamia nuts? I'm trying to think. Cashews actually. Did you know they have to be steamed to be opened? So they're like susceptible to like bacteria and fungus because to get them out of their shell.
You got
to
get the peanuts out of them.
Sure. You have to steam them to get them open. Like, because you can't just get them out. Yeah.
So did you ever have like one of those really bad reactions where you had to like get the EpiPen and stuff?
I've never had to do EpiPen, but I'll get hives. I'm the one that then I get it, like it's weird. It'll start more where my stomach will start itching. So it's always around my stomach. And then I get like these red kind of hives just up in my body. It happens randomly. I'll be at a restaurant and I'll be like, oh, don't know what they put in there, but my body don't like it. So
yeah, I got hives once in my crotch. And I went to the doctor.
Are you sure it was hives?
And I had it was, I swear. And
I wish you guys could see the look.
Oh, Rhett's face.
I'm fine.
Yeah, I wish you could see the look on Rhett's face. His jaw was just dropped open.
Yeah, I didn't know about this.
So, Brittany, tell me about your past. I got hives in my crotch.
Yeah, I went to the doctor to get it checked out. Well, I'm going to keep going with this story. Good.
I want to hear it.
And the it was one of those intern like assistant persons, okay. And they got me to drop my pants and took a look at it. This guy, and it was really awkward. And then the doctor comes in, and I'm like, okay. I tell him the whole story again, and I start dropping pants. I don't need to see. And he just says, here's some antibiotics or something. And he didn't look at it. And I was like, well,
that's
I'm
really
glad
strange.
He didn't look at it. But then I felt bad that he didn't look at it.
Yeah, like,
so why can't you take a look?
Was it a fungus?
It was, I think we determined that.
Can't happen.
We did not determine what caused the hives. And it was hives, for the record. But, so the doctor just said, well, it's probably stress. It never happened before, never happened again.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, my.
There's so many jokes that you can make about that.
I did not mean to bring this up. How did this happen?
This is supposed to be allergies. Okay, so you're allergic to anything else?
No, I mean, just all, like, oh, you know, sometimes, like, the perfumes that are really strong. I'll be at, like, the post office, and some woman will have Brown's perfume, and I will just be dying. I'll have to walk out, and my eyes will start streaming. So, I'm just sensitive to, like, awful perfumes sometimes.
Nothing ever life-threatening.
No, God, so it's all minor.
So, your brother changed the trajectory of your life from an early age just to kind of save him from swelling.
Exactly. Because I mean, the thing is, like, you know, especially when kids are that young, it's dangerous because if he kept swelling up, like, what if his allergy gets more severe and his throat starts to close when he gets stung? Or, you know what I mean? It's not, like, you need to get kids out of that.
And it
like,
was happening regularly, I
yeah,
guess. Yeah.
Like, to the point that they had to move because he was just getting eaten alive.
And so, how old were you when you moved to Arizona?
One and a half.
One and a half.
So
your first memories are in the desert.
I do. My first memories are like, all I remember was this real, well, we moved to Sedona. So it was 4,500 like feet is the elevation. Mm. So it's like an hour and a half from Phoenix. Phoenix is like desert. So where we moved to in Sedona, it's all red rocks, red dirt. It's like known for being a tourist city. Like they have 22,000 people that live there now. I think there was like maybe 2,500 or 5,000 when we moved there. And it was definitely a retirement town. And now it's just a full blown tourist town. Like they get like 8 million tourists a year or something crazy. It's beautiful.
To see the red rocks.
Just, you'll have to Google it, Sedona. Like, it's just, it's been in a lot of movies. Like, it's just gorgeous. But there's nothing to do. Like, you're a small tourist town.
So what did you do? What was life like? Like the grade school Brittany growing up.
Oh God. I mean, I think the good thing about it, I mean, the bad thing was there weren't a lot of kids and any kids that you met or friends that you made were usually tourists and they're gone in a week. So I had a lot of friends that were like from New York, from Tucson, from Phoenix, from other places that would come in the summer for like a week or come. I mean, I think that was really hard. The Brittany young, because there was nothing to do, we spent a lot of time hiking and we go to the creek a lot. Like people don't know this, but there's a place called Slide Rock and the locals know not to go there because it gets shut down like multiple times a year for your like E. coli bacteria because people like go to the bathroom in the water. So all the locals go down to Red Rock Crossing, which is like cleaner. So I spent a lot of my summers just like playing in the water and we had one movie theater.
So that's upstream of where the tourists take dumps in the water.
Oh, it's downstream and way downstream. Like it's all rinsed out by then because like it's like way like many miles away from where they all are doing their business in the water. Mm-hmm. But no, when we moved there, there was a place called Bayless. It was Bashes and Payless put together. It was kind of like your drugstore and your pharmacy and your like grocery store in one store.
Okay.
And then there's a place called the Flicker Shack. And there was this old guy that hated kids, but had the only movie theater in town, hated kids. So we had,
it was called the Flicker Shack?
The Flicker Shack. Yeah, and
the movie Flicker, right?
And we they would only play one movie at a time, and it would be there forever. And it was just one theater. We didn't have until I was in high school. Was there actually Harkins came in with 7 theaters, and that was like the biggest thing to ever happen to Sedona. Seven. When we got 7 theaters, that was like that was huge.
Oh yeah.
So you spent your whole childhood there in Arizona.
Yeah, and well, I like my mom. She was a wheat farmer, so she grew up with horses, and I wanted to get a horse, so probably about like 5 or 6, I think I bugged her enough years. I got into horseback riding, so I grew up doing it. At first, I did like Western Pleasure, and I did some jumping, like you know, English.
What is what now?
Western Pleasure. It's
Western
just,
Pleasure.
Yeah, it's not.
There's a place in Van Nuys, I think, that's called that.
Oh snap! No, No, it's like basically like when you see people like they like, you know, in at shows where they just like walk, trot, and canter, and like, okay, you turn around and walk, trot, and canter
kind
and
of
show.
Picking up their feet like this, like kind of.
That's gated. That's different. It's a little bit different. Like they'll be like Tennessee walkers and stuff. Like those are like, but it's just like when they, you know, you walk, you trot, let's say you walk, you know, they run.
Show
like,
horses.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, so you're not roping anything.
No, no, I didn't do any barrel racing or roping or any of that.
Did like, you jump over any of those sticks?
I did. I jumped over sticks. So,
what's that called?
Jumping.
Yeah. Okay, great.
But then I got into dressage pretty heavily, which is like, it's really boring. It's in the Olympics. It's really boring to watch and really hard to do. It's kind of like, the easiest way to explain it is like ballet on horseback. So it's like you have certain letters and you do certain things at certain letters. So like a 20 meter circle would be like a little circle in a little area, or you know, changes would be like changing lead, like from like left lead to right lead. It's like, it's really boring to watch and really
very
hard
technical.
To do. Yes. Yeah. So I rode horses right all the way up to 18. I was about 18, and I grew up doing like sports and playing tennis. I was a total tomboy, like really like major tomboy. Well, my brother was 17 months older than me and I idolized him. So it was like whatever he wanted to do, like I wanted to do. So like, you know, we play video games together. We always like be around each other. We always just got along.
So what kind of school situation are we talking about here?
School situation was really strange because it was such a small town, and like Arizona is like second worst in the nation funding for education. So kindergarten was good, and then they pulled us out in first grade. We weren't learning anything. It was like nap time and playing with clay. So my mom actually started a school in our basement, and then it was called Children's Open School, and I went to the school there for 2 years till third grade, and they
started a school in your basement.
Like
a homeschool?
Yeah, a homeschool situation. And then we had 15 students. They paid tuition. They got a gifted teacher to come in. Her name was, I think it was Brenda Wyckoff, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it was 2 years. I went to school in my basement. But it was honestly, it was great. And I mean, they opened up the school to like, you know, they had an interview process with the parents, but it was like the parents had to do with stuff with the kids at least once a week. And then once a month, there was a group activity where we went camping, or we were studying like ruins, and we went up to Flagstaff, Arizona, and we did excavating. Like we got to go into like where the NAU, like the dig sites, and like, you know, dig up pottery and whatever and all that jazz. So it was, and like we went to like Lowell Observatory and stayed the night. Like it was really cool. Like it was a very, like the school was very interactive. And it was an interesting teaching method because you could do anything you wanted all day, but all there was to do was educational activities, and you had to do one thing that had to do with math or one thing that had to do with science, but all the toys, all the activities were learning.
And there was one teacher,
yeah,
who was there, yeah, kind of making all this happen.
Yeah, and then I think it was about third grade that I really missed, like, I wanted to be around the kids. And my mom's like, I'm just going to send you to school to socialize. So I went back into school system at third grade and then just, you know, stayed in public schools up until high school. But I ended up switching. I had pretty bad experiences with bullying when I was younger. So I had to switch schools.
So tell us about that. How old were you when that happened?
Oh God, both my brother and I were just like blonde hair, blue eyes, just like, you know, like really tan. We're just nice kids. But because my dad was an airline pilot, and at that time in Sedona, it was just, everyone thought we were like, you know, filthy rich. And it's like, no, we're just middle class. But like the median income was not, it was not what it is now. Like now it's like multi-million dollar houses everywhere. But at that point, like, you know, they said that my parents like overbuilt, and they just built this just like nice, simple house. Like, oh, you overbuilt for Sedona. So everyone, like all the parents, I think a lot of it starts with the parents. So the parents like were, you know, thought my parents were rich. So then the kids thought I was rich because my mom, like, you know, she would like, oh, my clothes were just from like Banana Republic, you know, or something, or Gap, like nothing crazy. But I always had just like nice clothes, or I don't know. So I had a lot of issues with like girls. It was really funny in kindergarten. I had a boy that kept ripping my dresses, and my dad's like, he showed me. He's like, next time he does it, just punch him. So he showed me, like took me into his bed. We practiced. So the next day he went to rip my dress, and I punched him so hard that it turned black underneath his eyes.
Both eyes?
Both eyes. I actually, yes, both eyes. And
you tried to shove his nose into his brain, didn't you?
I must have.
My mom, they
called the principal, and then my parents had to come in for a teacher meeting. I was in kindergarten, had to come in for a parent teacher meeting. And we were at the grocery store that night, and this guy, like this little kid, was his mom. He's like, Mom, that's the girl that decked the boy at school today. Like, my whole sister was so funny. But
So I'm confused. Who was the bully?
Well, he kept ripping my clothes.
Okay,
so,
got
but
it.
I was left alone up until, like, I left school like that, you know. My dad was, like, I would literally come home every day with, like, ripped clothes. And my dad's, like, just a deckhand. My dad's old school. He's from, again, a farmer. He grew up in California. So my parents are, like, they're, like, from the mentality, like, you step on someone's property, shoot them. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not supposed to be there, like, they're all, they're literally, like, they're just, I don't know. They're from a different planet.
Well, if nobody was stepping in and, you know, if the teacher wasn't stepping in.
No, we tried that and the kid would keep ripping my clothes. My dad's just like, just deck him.
He never did it again, did he?
Nope. I was left alone up until, but then I left school and then people thought I was like even in high school, I worked really hard and I saved and I got an older BMW and I was making the payments. I was working all summer to, you know, make the payments on the car. Well, I would come out and like people would write like spoiled, like BITCH on my car. Like I literally like wrote it on my car.
Like spray paint type?
No, they took it was dirty. They just basically scraped it in with their fingers. I mean, but it scratched the paint, but like the stuff like that happened all the time. But I feel like, honestly, I always feel like it was a blessing because it just made me stronger. And I think that I'm the last person to judge people because I was judged my whole life.
What do you think was the lowest point? I mean,
I think what probably was really hard. There was this girl that was, we finally got this family that moved in on the other side where we were at in Sky Mountain. There was this auction where this house was foreclosed and this family bought it, this doctor, and he had like three daughters and a son. And I became friends with the oldest daughter and she had a sleepover and I ended up being like the first person to fall asleep. And while I was sleeping, they poured nail polish on me. So I woke up in the middle of the night and my skin, I was like, what's going on? They're like, oh, you knocked it off the counter, blah, blah, blah. It came out later. They poured it on me because my mom went back after them. But I literally had to call my mom, go home. She had to go get nail polish remover. My skin was bleeding. It was really bad. So, I mean, I had stuff like that all the time. I had girls pulling my hair, girls. And I'm not a person that's, I didn't do anything. Like they just would just pick me out. So, I mean, it got really bad in junior high. So I ended up having to go to a separate school that was in Big Park, which is it's like 45 minutes away. So I had to ride the bus 45 minutes and then ride it an hour back. Day to go to school. But I mean, it made things, I got a little bit better, but then I had a girl at that school. The problem was that it's just so random. That's when I really started getting into theater and acting, and they had Missoula Children's Theater is like a traveling thing that comes to town once a year. It's really cool. And everyone comes like from Sedona, Cottonwood, Camp Verde, any of the Flagstaff, they'll come in and audition. It's like a week long thing where they put on a play in a week basically. So they had, and everyone wants roles in it. Everyone wants to do it because it's really freaking cool. Like they bring the sets. It's just all the costumes. It's amazing what they do in 1 week. But they had, for The Wizard of Oz, they had auditions and out of, I think it was 550 people or whatever, I got the role of Dorothy. And then that caused a lot of problems because like I just had girls that just didn't like me for whatever reason. And that was at the new school. So it's just girls.
And we're talking about a time before, I mean, you know, today there's all this
anti-bullying stuff.
There
wasn't
anti-bullying campaigns, and so there's documentaries about it. There's movements. There's organizations. Yeah. This is before any of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you? What do you think about the way that things are handled today? And do you wish that somebody had kind of stepped in and helped you, or you're like, you know what, this actually made me who I am?
I'm really glad that I'm glad it happened to me, but I don't want it to happen to anybody else. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I think it made me really tough because I mean I moved to Hollywood when I was 18 by myself. Like I went on 150 student film auditions before I booked a student film, and it's not that hard. You know, sometimes there's like two people auditioning. It's not, and I'm like, and I know I'm not doing a bad job. Like I know some of them like really well. So I mean, I think I was so used to like people attacking me or rejection or whatever growing up that it just felt normal. Like it was like, oh, okay, well, this is life. Let's like try. I got so used to knowing that you just have to get up and try again and get up and try again. Cause like my mom made me go to school. Like she made me like, you know, go, and she didn't let me, I mean, she would give me what she called sanity days. Like once a month she would say that I had like, you know, a doctor's appointment or something. She'd give me the day off. So she let me stay home. But
it was basically like torture every day.
Yeah. I would come home crying. It got better when I got into high school because that's when I got really bad acne, and then the girls finally started being nice to me.
Oh, really?
Because my skin was all broken out. So then I was like, oh, okay, then I wasn't so much of a target. And being in high school, like by that point, there had been some more people that moved into the town that like quote unquote had money. And again, my parents were middle class, but it was just like most people were very low income. Mm-hmm. So to them, they thought my parents were like filthy rich. So I think that was when like high school actually got a little bit better. And I think two people start to mature a little bit more. And I think that the difference between high school and grade school is grade school, they're going to say things to your face. High school, they'll say it to behind your back, which I prefer a lot more. Like, talk about me behind your back. Like, just leave me alone. I don't care what you say about me. Like, just let me eat my lunch. So.
And your brother, who you were close to, was like a year ahead of you in school, maybe too.
Yeah.
And so was he a resource for you?
He, like, I think in high school it was good because, you know, we kind of like, you start to form like, I hate to say it, it's like a posse. Like, you have people that you hang out with, and there's protection in numbers. So when you're around, like, you know, we had all like, you know, we'd had LAN parties at the house, and that's when I started to become like, if anything, more of my friends were guys than girls, because girls can be catty sometimes. Guys are more fun. The things that I want to do are usually guy things. Like, I want to go to the theme parks. I want to go to movies. I'm not saying all girls are like that, but just like, it just seemed to work out that way, that I wanted, while they're having their Dune LAN party, I wanted to hang out and eat pizza with them. So like that, it just ended up working out. But I mean, my brother experienced a little bit of the bullying. Like, he had a guy like throw a burrito at him and like almost took out his eye. Like, just like, no, that was in grade school. No, I mean, it's interesting. Like, everyone has their own experiences and have gone through like way worse, but that's, you know, Sedona is a very interesting town. You know why, though? It's so beautiful. I have this theory that people move there thinking it's going to solve all their problems, and then they realize they're, wherever they go, their problems follow them. So you end up having this gorgeous place with all these crazy, miserable people. That's really what Sedona is. It's all, we call them there's all the nut jobs. Like, they're all nutty.
Well, do you think that the bullying that you were experiencing, you know, you said that you started theater and you started, you know, trying to be an entertainer. Were those related?
No, I think that when I was 4 years old, I saw the Miss USA pageant, and I literally wore a bathing suit for 4 years of my life. Like, my mom let me, she didn't care. She's like, so, I mean, I had to wear like regular clothes to school, but like any other time, like in the winter, we have pictures. I have me with like tights and a bathing suit and whatever. Like, I don't know. I think I always like wanted to be a performer without even really knowing what that was. I haven't aspired to be like Miss America or anything, but like, there's this place called Tlacopaki that's like in Sedona, and there's like a little platform outside of one of the restaurants, and my brother would go, "Here's Brittany," and I'd go up there and sing and dance, and now there's a sign there that says no performing on the platform. That's because of me. Because I would like literally, people would give me pennies and whatever, and it would pull away from the businesses, and they're getting really annoyed because, I mean, I was a little girl. Like, it was obnoxious. I was loud, but like, it drew attention from what their businesses were.
Right.
It's interesting because you describe yourself as a tomboy and you're interested in then things that you end up having more guy friends than girlfriends.
Yeah.
It kind of plays into the bullying environment that I guess you were in. But at the same time, you've got this want to be a beauty queen type of, bathing suit.
No, but you understand, but it was just, I think that I like to do all the guy things, but I've always been this way. Like, I like hair and I like makeup, but I'll go camping in a heartbeat. Like, that's just, I think I have a lot of interests. So, but I think mentally, like mentality wise, so even now, like my all my best friends are guys. I mean, when eventually I do get married, all my bridesmaids are going to be male. Like, it's
that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and I think that
I think that's not allowed.
It's gonna have to be. I'm sorry. They're like, that's how it's gonna work.
Are you gonna make them wear dresses?
No, like they can wear their suits and be them sassy selves. But like, it's just, you know, it's just how it's gonna work out.
Okay, so you said you moved to Hollywood at 18.
Yes.
So as high school was finishing up,
I graduated a year early. So I ended up, I got an art scholarship for drawing. Like, it was so fun. I had an academic scholarship to Northern Arizona University, which is Flagstaff. But at the last minute, I got a scholarship that was like partial tuition to ASU. And I was like, I don't know, I went with my gut. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do well in that cold weather. I'm going to go to Arizona State. So I ended up going to ASU for 2 years. And so I moved here when I was 19. I turned 19 the month I moved here, because I moved in August.
Okay.
So I went into college at 17. So
for drawing.
For drawing. So I was in art classes the first year, doing, you know, all that stuff. And
but you didn't say I'm a drawing major, did you?
Oh God, no.
I'm majoring in drawing.
No, I was in the arts dorm, which is like, and it was called McClintock, and it's like this, it's right on campus, and it's all like architecture students, dance students, theater students, and acting, like, you know, like, well, let's see, theater and art. And it is the craziest party dorm on ASU. It is nuts.
And dramatic.
No, oh my God. Like, you don't understand. Like, people, someone flooded the dorm one night where the rec area is and lit toilet paper on fire. Like, stuff like that happened on a weekly basis. I got to the point where I didn't get out of bed for the fire alarms, which is extremely illegal because I was like, I should get up at 6 a.m. for class. I can't deal with this. Right, I'm just going to go to sleep. I just put the pillow and stay.
I'll get up when I feel the heat.
Exactly, because it's just another false alarm. It's just someone else doing something.
Something crazy.
Exactly.
And artsy fartsy.
Yeah, no, like, you, ASU is the kind of campus that you see, like, they're not supposed to haze for, like, their sororities and fraternities, but you see naked people with, like, clown things running down the middle of, like, the, I forget what the name of the street, like, all the time. Like, you see the most crazy stuff.
So at some point during this process, though, you were like, I don't want to be a drawer.
I never wanted to be. I think, like, I always wanted to do acting, but my mom, like, you know, wanted me to try college, and she's always been super supportive, but she's afraid, just because you guys know this, being in LA, it's a hard city to be in. And I think she didn't want me to be in an industry that was so challenging and so heartbreaking, and she just wanted to protect me from that. So I think I just prayed long enough, and, like, one day she woke up and she said something, like, God told me. It was like, you know, I'm the one holding her back. And then the moment she told me, she's like, just go to LA. I moved, like, a month after that. Like, I wanted to leave right then and there, but I finished out my finals and then moved. But
just, after sophomore year.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It was right after my finals. I moved.
So she gave you her blessing.
Yeah.
And your dad, what about him?
Oh, he was always in. My dad's the kind of guy that was like, whatever you want, just go for it. I support you. Like, you know, sounds great, Brittany, do it. Like, that's, my mom's like, well, we need to think about this. Like, that, my mom
If they
was,
rip your dress, punch him. End
exactly,
of story.
Exactly.
Right.
If you want to go to LA, go to LA. Like, that was my father. But
so what do you do when you're 19, you're a 19-year-old girl and you're moving to Los Angeles? How does that work?
I always thought of it as like a business, where I moved here with very much of a business mentality. I had this thing. I was like, I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to work. So I bought this book called Acting is Everything by Judy Kerr, and I, like, bookmarked every single little thing on it, and I got into classes right away. So I was, you know, I'd saved some money while I was in college. So I was taking scene study classes and commercial classes, and I basically treated it like a business. I went to every single audition. It didn't matter what it was, because I figured it was audition experience. And I did everything I possibly could. I did like tons of actor, like, you know, the casting director workshops, and I went to producers a lot. Like, I went to producers on like Ugly Betty and Gilmore Girls and Chuck and a bunch of shows. Some like casting directors seeing me, and it would get so close. It get down to like the six people. Cause like what people don't understand, there's like auditions, and then there's like the producer callback. So on the producer callback, that's like, they've already had 10,000 submissions. They've probably auditioned 100 people. They'll narrow it down to like six or eight or four to bring to producers to show them. I would get so close on this stuff and then not get it. And it was driving me so crazy. So one day there was this notice on Now Casting for this company called Operator 11. And this guy named, I think his name was Josh Harris. He took his last $3 million and he created this company that was like live video broadcasting. And they were looking for people that wanted to do their own shows. So I thought about, I'm like, oh, well, you know, would it be funny if I did this like Clueless life coaching character named Ron Anthony Tanner? So I went into that and pitched them my idea and like made out with my hand in the audition, and they're like, she's crazy, we love her. So I started
made out with your hand.
I made out with my hand. Like, I had a whole like the whole spiel about like Rhonda's like Rhonda kissing techniques or something, and like literally made out with my hand in character, and they were dying laughing. So like, it worked. So I started doing a show with them, and then I think it was probably 8 years ago or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was getting like 100,000, 150,000 views an episode on my stuff. But
and what was the outlet again? This was...
It was a live video broadcasting company called Operator 11. And it was... I came to work one day and the doors were just chain closed. They ran out of money.
But it was a website.
Yeah, it was a website. Yeah, it was like a like kind of think of like you know how people they have like live stream now,
yeah.
Or like it's kind of, it was like one of the first kind of like live stream
Ustream blog TV type thing.
But I did it in a different way. I would pre-film all my sketches and then I would go live for a little bit, but I would play my pre-film sketches. So I turn it into kind of like a show where I would do, you know, I would intro it and outro it, but the middle part was all pre-done. And
are
I
they still
play
online
it
somewhere?
I have the FLV files and they're awful because this is like 8.5 years ago, 8 years ago. Like, it's not like this is back in the day. It was this when still things were what 4:3 like aspect ratio. Like, yeah. It's not
320x240.
Oh yeah. And when we keyed things out, we thought it looked really good and it looked awful. This is like before, you know, come on. This is like, I don't even know if After Effects was out yet, or like, you know, everyone was doing stuff in Final Cut. And like,
but this is how you were getting paid
I was getting paid. I was getting paid some. I to the extra money, I did a lot of promo modeling work, which is, oh my God.
What is that?
It's so hard. It's basically like you on your feet for 15, 18 hours a day. And it's like, you know.
Modeling clothes or?
Or it would be like a promo. Like, you know how, let's say that you're like, you go to like any like volleyball event and let's say there's Kellogg's is there and they have a bunch of like attractive people walking around with like boxes of Kellogg's, like the new cereal. Yeah. That's, it's called promotional modeling. So I.
Walking around a live event with toting some sort of product.
Yeah, but what I worked a lot of the, because it's perfect because I'm pasty white, I did the ABP Pro Tour, so for volleyball, so like that goes all over all the beaches, and that out in the sun for
so
15
beach
hours.
Volleyball.
Beach volleyball, handing out sunscreen samples for like 15 hours at a time.
Well, you're a tall
I'm short in
girl,
comparison
so.
To those people.
Well, how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
okay.
No, but I mean, like, I felt at home. I was like, oh my God, like, this is the first time in my life that I'm short. Like, everyone's tall in beach volleyball.
But that's hard work.
It was, and they think that the hardest part was that it took a while to get paid on stuff. Sometimes it'd be like 5 months before you get paid because it's not, it's like you would get paid really well. It just take time to get paid. So I also worked out with my roommate where I was a dog walker. So I would walk her dog in exchange for money off my rent. So I get like $600 a month off my rent. So I did, and then for all my classes, I would paint I painted my one teacher's fence. I would pull weeds. I'd take care of her house when it's gone. Like, I would literally work out with my teachers where I would work for them to be able to take lessons for cheaper. So I did anything you could possibly imagine to pay the bills.
So the live stream job started from just going to yet another audition.
Yeah.
Which you kind of, at a certain point, you said you were kind of taking all auditions just to see what would catch.
Well, because I mean, when I first, like, this is not so much how it is now, but like, well, I mean, it might be, but like a lot of actors when they first move to LA will do a lot of student films because sometimes those go to festivals and they do well, or they're, you know, all the future, you know, directors. So I did a lot of student films. Like when I finally did book one with LA Film School, I ended up doing 18 in a row. Yes, because what happened is I would be on set and then like someone there would have their thesis project coming up and like, and I would just hand out my cards to everybody. And I was like, you know, I was nice and I worked hard and I did my stuff and I left. So I ended up doing like, I think it was 18 in a row and I couldn't use one of them because the footage was all terrible because it's all students. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did a couple for USC. I did a couple AFI ones, just a lot of student films.
But the live stream thing, how long did you do that before you showed up and it was just like doors were
six
barred?
6 months. I worked my butt off for 6 months. Like, and I think I had on their thing, I had like 100,000 followers on their site.
Wow. Because
I used MySpace. I would go on MySpace and I would spend all day long talking to people. And I had this whole thing that I was like, well, in character. People
and what was
thought,
the name of the character?
Rhonda Anthony Tanner. So it was Rat. It was like Rat coaching. I want to exterminate the pest from your life thing. So like, but I mean, my mom always says if you can build an audience with Rhonda, you can build an audience with anything. Because it was a very weird character. But that was right when Lonely Girl 15 like revealed that she wasn't a real person. Do you remember when that was a real person? Excuse me.
Yeah.
That's right when I started doing YouTube.
Well, no, she wasn't a real person. It was a character.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. So the fact that she like, you know, was an actress, that's when that all blew up is when I started YouTube because my mom's like, well, Brittany, she's like, I was really angry, really upset because I put 6 months of my life into this. I thought I finally had something going. You know, I thought like when you come to LA, it's very much where like the mentality of you need to take classes to learn how to do anything. I don't know if you guys know that, but like you need to take a class to learn how to direct. You need to take a class to learn how to write. You need to take a class to learn because it's all, there's no limits to the way you can spend your money here. Mm-hmm. You know this.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was really good for me because like people at the studio taught me Final Cut and then I bought a green screen and I just started writing. So I almost got to like become a filmmaker without having to pay money or go to class, or it's like I got just to learn from doing it. And like that was the best possible experience, was just to be able to just try it and make mistakes.
And you started your first YouTube channel as this character,
as
right?
As this character, yeah, in 2007.
That was based on your mom's advice?
Yeah.
Hey, she's like
brilliant.
She was watching Lonely Girl?
Yeah, no, she saw something in the news because she's like, Brittany, this girl is now, getting TV stuff from her YouTube channel. Like, and I kept, you know what I kept hearing at the casting director workshops is like, you have to be, you know, a co-star to get any guest star roles. You have to be a guest star to get any reoccurring or series regular. You have to get any series regular roles before you'll be up for pilots. Like, they have this whole pecking order. And they kept saying, like, you have to be a name, you have to be a name, you have to be a name. And I'm like, well, what if you're a name online? Would that make a difference? Like, you know, so I thought maybe if I created something online, fine. I read this really, really good article by this casting director named Bonnie Gillespie. And she's like, you can either keep chasing these directors and chasing these casting directors and chasing these producers, or you create something and people come to you. So that really got me thinking. I'm like, okay, I need to, you know, I've been here in LA for 4 years, like busting my butt. Nothing's major has happened. Like, you know, gotten close on some things. You know, so this was like my shot to do something.
What's the closest thing you got to would we know something?
No, I mean, I just like a lot of like, just a lot of like co-star roles.
Big at the time. They were a big opportunity.
Oh yeah.
For you.
No, there was an NBC pilot that I got pretty close on, but they never ended up shooting it. I got cast as the girl and then it just fell through. So, I mean, that was like the closest I got to anything.
So Lonely Girl 15 was the way in to start a YouTube account for you.
Yeah. I just saw her. Like, I was like, okay, like, is she, you know, maybe if I create something online that would open up doors, is like all I just love acting. So it's like, you know, any possible way, like I'm the kind of person, like I'm willing to put in the work, and you guys too. Like, I don't care if I have to edit 20 hours in 2 days or whatever it is. I mean, as long as it's a good product and, you know, I'm getting to, like, you know, do what I love, and it's worth it.
So you just, the first thing you did was you just moved that character over. Hey, I've got 100,000 followers over here. I'm going to start a YouTube channel. How was that transition?
It started out where I, like, in the first month I was getting about like 5,000 views an episode. By month two, I was getting like 10,000 views an episode.
And what year? This was
2007.
Okay. Yeah.
So then, like, then on average, my average, then after, like, you know, I think it was, I did that when I used to respond to every single message and comment. Like, I literally got carpal tunnel in my wrists. I was responding to like 8,000 comments a week. I was insane. I just turned it into my full-time job. I was like, I'm just going to, and then the partner program came along and I was like, oh my God, yay. I think I had 3,000 subscribers when I applied to the partner program and got accepted. And that was so nerve-wracking. Just remember back then, because like if you were denied, then you had to wait like 6 months again to apply. Do you remember that? Okay, this is like, okay.
I didn't know that's how it worked.
Yeah, you have to, if they were denied, you had to wait 6 months to apply again. So when I applied, I got accepted and I was like, yeah, I'm a YouTube partner. Oh my God. So then I started doing stuff with Rhonda, but then I was on that channel for, I think it was about 2 years, and that's when I met Shane. Like, Shane was watching my Rhonda stuff and he thought that I was actually Rhonda. And when he found out that I put out one that was like 10 facts about me, and I decided I would finally show people, like, and I think it did really well on my channel, was like, oh my gosh, she's acting.
But it was the same channel.
Same channel.
So this was like you saying, this is a character.
Exactly.
And was that like a bombshell for people? It was
for
Shane.
For a lot of people. No, for Shane it was. Because he this is Shane's words, not mine. He's like, oh my God, she's not retarded. Like, he was like, these are Shane's words, not mine. So he's like, oh my God. So then, I think we started messaging each other back and forth. Because again, I watched 50,000 videos in my first year. Like, you know how YouTube used to track the video views
that's
that you'd
right.
watch?
That's right. It would show you in the number show you of views of the, you have watched.
Amount of videos. Yeah. So I watched 50,000 videos in the first year.
What?
Because I was leaving comments, like, just like, I figured, I literally thought, I mean, the best way to form a community is to go out and, you know, like, make friends and watch stuff and be supportive. And I would leave really nice comments. Like, if someone had a singing video, I'd be like, oh my God, you have a really good voice. Or I'd try to.
Did you invent the phrase sub for sub?
No.
Was that you?
God, no. No, I was.
I watched your video, watch mine. It was
no, I never did that. The only person I ever got blocked by was Bratz and Beretta.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so funny. I ran into them at the YouTube space. I'm like, you guys know you blocked my channel, because I used to go every day on to like Lisa Nova and whatever, and I'd leave a comment on their channel page.
Well, you went on our channel too.
You probably.
I remember.
Was it the weird eye photo? Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
Was like, oh gosh, who is this? I didn't block you. You don't remember this?
I do not remember it.
I was dedicated, man.
Because you could go to someone's channel
page.
I mean,
yeah.
You can still comment on somebody's channel now, but it's basically hidden.
You don't
hidden.
See it, yeah. It's not.
This was a front and center default thing. The latest person to comment on a channel, and a lot of people wouldn't do it, so it would stay up there a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd do it a couple of times.
I would.
But in character.
Exactly. 100%
were,
in character. And it was all like
character.
Sparkles and rainbows. Yep, all in
and
character.
I thought you were that girl. And I was like, oh, B-Rat.
Yeah.
B-Rat needs to, I mean, multiple times. I forgot.
That is amazing.
It's kind of embarrassing, but not, because it was my past. So I think I've learned a lot. But I mean, you know, it's like you just see what works.
So Shane, whenever you did that on Shane's channel, he had seen your videos, or maybe
him and Kate used to watch my videos and make fun of me. Like, I was like, you know, Shane always has that person that he loves to watch for a laugh, and I was the person that he would watch and be like, oh my God, she's mentally insane. So, like, we started messaging each other back and forth, because, like, remember, YouTube had a share button, too.
And you were in character.
No, this was after character. Okay. Like, I put out that he contacted me after. He's like, what? Oh my God. He said, he's like, Kate, she's a real person. It's not Raja's talking thing. I didn't even know. So we used to message each other back and forth on actually MySpace, because MySpace was still very prevalent then. So he was like, oh, is the share button broken for you? I'm like, yeah. He's like, we should hang out sometime. I'm like, yeah. So this is
and
the first time.
How popular was Shane
at
the time?
He was getting, like, I think he had like 25,000 subscribers, and he's getting like 50,000 views an episode. And I had 12,000 subscribers, and he had 8,000. So that's when we became friends. He we're just small channels. So we met up at 3rd Street Promenade with Kate, and it was the first time I've ever met anyone online. Like, I don't do that. Like, that scares me. Like, hey, like, but I just knew we talked online. I'm like, he seems normal. And I was kind of hanging out with this like group of guys that was just really strange. I was like all of their, in a strictly platonic way, I was like, all they're treating me all like their girlfriend. And it was so strange. I was like, I need to get out of this. So I need to make some new friends. Like,
how specifically were they treating you?
Well, they would just like text me and call me all the time and be like super like flirty. And it was just this whole group of guys, and it was weird. It was just really strange. So they were dating all other girls, but then like they would get jealous of it. I was just really strange. Like, I was like, I'm not dating you guys. We're just all friends. What is going on? So I ended up, I was like, it was at that time in life that I needed some new friends. So Shane and I think then we went, Shane, Kate, and I went to Six Flags. And I remember we went to Whole Foods later. He's like, could you ever play an emo character? And I'm like, yeah, what do you want me to say? And I was just like really dry, like all throughout the supermarket. He's like, brilliant. So he wrote it. And then we did emo breakup. And then that went pretty big. And then we did How to Get Big on YouTube. And that I got big trouble with my roommate, because like Shane like filmed on her bed on the one seat. Like I kind of talked into it, but it's really funny now when we go back and talk about it. But yeah, so that was
what,
like,
on her bed?
He filmed the, I don't want to say what part of the video. It's like, where,
just say it.
No, it's like he's doing something very inappropriate to Joe Nation on my bed. Like, but they like censored it out.
On your roommate's bed.
On my roommate's bed, yes. And then she, a coworker, told her, because the video got like, I don't know, it was a couple million views. And then she goes,
I saw your bed. There's two dudes in it.
Exactly. That's your house. And like, they're filming. And so it was just really, she wasn't the nicest person, but still, I should have asked her. That was one of my things going back. It was a guilt thing. But it was like one of those things where I had no money. Filming locations. Like, it was bad. It was bad.
So at some point in this process, you say, okay, it's time to kind of develop my own identity.
No, Shane's the one that said, you need to stop playing Raw Dead. You need to create a new channel. And you need to, because you can play other characters. He's like, you should create a channel where you play all different things. And I was like, oh, light bulb. Like, duh, that's what I should have done from the beginning, was like, be myself and play multiple things. So he's the reason I start.
Yeah, what year is this?
I think that was 4 years ago, four okay. or five, for my Brittany Louise Taylor channel. So then that's when I formed that one. So I think it was because of him that I did it. And I think the first video I uploaded was like the emo breakup bloopers or something, mm-hmm. like from the bloopers from our video. So
did you have a lot of success early on because you had Shane, who was growing in popularity, who was, you know, you were appearing in his videos. So was it, you know,
it
you
was,
kind of
no, I had
moved
two,
quickly?
Two, no, well, then it was crazy. I mean, but before that, I'd been on YouTube for 2.5 years. So like, it wasn't like, you know, it was really weird. For me, like, I got really excited when I got 50 subs a day. Like, that was big. Like, you know, my goal was like 20 to 30, where I would try to like, you know, make friends. And I'm like, you know, I at that point, I love to keep like a graph. I'm a person that likes like notes and lists.
Okay.
So like, oh yeah, I got like 15 subscribers a day. Yeah. And then I would keep like write down every morning what my subscribers were. My
views were.
You were
doing your own analytics, in other words.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, I was. So
yeah,
I would,
YouTube's nice enough to make that graph for us now.
Now, back then.
You were doing the lines and everything
old
back
school.
Then.
Old school, yeah.
Line graphing it.
Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, then when we, it went really crazy. But the thing is, like, about Shane, though, he would kept doing shout-outs, and he'd tell people, like, I remember I did a video for Panasonic, and he told people to go say, show me your tatas on my video, but, like, show me your, yeah. So literally I have 50,000 comments of show me your yes. So like, and I was like, how do I explain this to Panasonic? Like
because your content is much cleaner. Like, you won't say the things that Shane said. It's different.
Yeah, I think that's why we're friends. We're polar opposites. Like that.
We're polar opposites.
Well, but we both have good hearts. But he's like, you know, he's like dirty and will say anything. And I'm like, no, I won't say that. I'm still like a little child. Like, I'm like, my mom will get mad at me.
Well, what kind of audience have you built? Who are the? I mean, is it girls watching you? It's a different audience than Shane in some ways, right?
I think that, you know, I've picked up like, but like most of it's from Shane. So I have like, my audience is like 83 or 84% female, just like between the ages of 13 to 24. So I have all these adorable, adorable young women. Like I always say at VidCon, like people get like, you know, they'll come and they'll surround them. Mine get in a line. I have the cute little girls that get in the line and they're very polite. Like everyone else gets like, mine's line. I just get a line. Like they're so cute. Like they all line up. They don't, then they're patient and they wait their turn. Like, they're so cute.
How does knowing that that is your audience impact what you create?
I think the best thing for me is like when you start to meet the people that watch your videos. I think anytime that you're tired or like, you know, you've on your fourth video that you're editing, like today where I'm like, I've edited four videos today. I'm like, and I'm still like, I'll have to go home and color correct and do more just because deadlines on a couple things. It's like when you meet the people and then like, there was this one girl, I remember just last VidCon not too long ago. She was, came up to me in line and she said, she started crying. She's like, you left a comment saying that I was beautiful and no one's ever told me that I was beautiful in my whole life. And she's this gorgeous Asian woman. I think she's Korean. Gorgeous. Like, absolutely gorgeous. And I'm like, no one had told her that she was beautiful. Like, I just the fact that, like, me leaving a comment on someone's video could change their life like that. Like, I think for me, like, I love acting so much and I love the people more. So, like, I don't know. I've always been, like, I don't really get all stressed out when things happen with YouTube with numbers or things break. Like, as long as there's someone watching, like, I just love the kids.
And I think something that just a casual viewer of yours may not realize is how technical you are in your approach. That you pretty much do everything on your channel. That you do the music. You may get someone to produce it or sweeten it or whatever.
Yeah, I have
editing and all of that is something that you hands on, right?
I just started to hire. I'm training, and she's brilliant. I've been training someone to help me just with editing on like the beauty videos, just because it's just like, you know, an extra 8 videos a month that I just need help on. So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I write and produce and pick up the props and film and do everything. And
you're very technically minded when it comes to those things.
I love it though. I have some of my friends that they're like, oh, I just want to act, just whatever. And I'm like, I love every part of the filmmaking process. I love the shot list. I love filming. I love editing. I love acting. I love the whole, I love the finished product. I love it. I always say I'll bleed for it. If I'm passionate about it, let's do it. I'm ready to bleed.
Now, what point did, or has this point come? Did you say, okay, well, now I'm doing YouTube. I mean, that's what my career is, and that's what my career goal is. Or is there still this sort of side dream or bigger dream beyond YouTube to be like, okay, I do want to parlay this into an acting career?
You know what's so funny? Like, have you ever made like a goal sheet, like of goals that you have? Well, like, okay, well, like
spreadsheet.
Okay, there we go. No, but I had
I'm too nervous to write them down.
No, but I did.
Because then I'll find it and feel guilty.
No, but it's so weird. I like literally found the sheet that I wrote, and I think I found it, I don't know if it was a couple months ago, and it was like a reoccurring role on a TV show. And I'm like, I have that right now. I'm like a national TV commercial. I'm like, I have that right now. I'm like, all these things I've written down, I was like, check, a manager that believes in me, check. And it's like, I realized at that moment that I'm like, I'm living my dream. I get to do what I love. And I'm like, I don't care if the project is on YouTube or it's a film or it's a TV show. I don't care where it's at, because I feel like the lines are crossing. Like, I was in such a rush and wanted so badly to break into TV and film, when right now TV and film wants to break into YouTube. Like, it's so strange. Like, everything's going online, and right now I have no desire to leave. If anything, I mean, I wrote an 8-episode web series. We had an offer for funding from one company. It wasn't enough money. We have another thing, fingers crossed, that we'll see if it comes through. Like, for me, if anything, I just want to keep, you know, increasing the quality and things that I make.
Would that be a new channel? What's the nature of it?
I don't want to go into it too much. This is just a really good, it'd be almost like a CW kind of show. So it's like, it's a like 10-minute webisodes. There's 8 of them. And, it's very interactive, and it's what my audience would like. Like, you know, it has to do with like romance and love, but it's like, it's really funny. Like, the characters are each one's very distinct, and it's very funny.
So you're playing a character.
I play the main girl, Samantha.
Samantha.
Yeah.
And just give us a little bit of what Samantha's like. What's the hook?
I think the big hook of the series is the relationship between her and her best friend, because they're perfect for each other. He's in love with her. She doesn't realize it. So it's like that whole thing where you're always rooting for them to get together. And then they finally do, and then they don't. And then, it's, you know, it's just all that. But it's like the series, again, I don't want to go into it too much. I'm so paranoid. I'm like afraid. The first eight episodes are written. The first season's done. And I just, you know, I want to get it made and get it out there. So
it's a question of sponsorship with enough money to cover the budget.
I just haven't, like, I thought about doing Kickstarter, but I have major issues with being like, hey, give me $10,000 and I'll give you a line in my show, you know, or something. Like, I don't want my kids' money or my viewers' money. I would rather, you know, get a sponsor behind it or get, you know, I feel like that's the route that I want to try. I mean, who knows? I might eventually, if, you know, try Kickstarter, but I don't think I want to. I don't want my viewers' money to do something that I want to do. I'd rather it be free for them and them just, you know, be entertained and have to deal with maybe a little bit of sponsorship in it.
Now, you've been doing this for quite some time.
7 years, yeah.
Right. And, you know, and we have each other, you know. This is not an easy business to be in, because YouTube is constantly changing and you have to constantly kind of reinvent yourself and come up with new things and keep people interested in that kind of thing. You're doing this kind of alone. And you're still doing it, and you're going to leave from here and go and edit more videos. What keeps you motivated? What keeps you going?
I think that it's just mentality. Like, I literally have to tell myself that, like, you know, that there's, like, I watched this really good sermon by this pastor, Joel Osteen. He was talking about how, like, you have to literally tell yourself that, like, there's nothing that you can't handle. Like, get up and, like, just know that whatever God gives you, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're religious or not, but, like, I'm a Jesus freak. So, like, he talked about how, like, you need to get up and say that, like, you know, that thank you, God, that whatever you give me today, I know that I can handle, because you wouldn't have given it to me if I couldn't have handled it. So on the days when I'm really tired, I'm like, okay, well, this is on my plate, so obviously I can handle it. So I think a lot of it's attitude. Instead of me, when I'm home editing, instead of being like, oh, I'd rather be out, it's like, oh, look at what I'm getting to do. Look at the products. And I mean, I struggle with the changes to YouTube, because if you notice, like, the trend is a lot of, like, you know, put up multiple videos that are lower quality, or like put up like a gaming video or whatever. And I just know for me, like, that's not my style. Like, I love making really cool videos. When I just put up like a challenge video with my brother, or a challenge with a friend, I'm like, I feel like I'm letting them down, and they love it. But I want over the top. I want like something different, you know, like, so it always bothers me. I'm like, I don't want to upload that video. But yeah, so I think then it's just fun. YouTube is one of those places that, like, you know, it's always going to keep changing. And I mean, who knows if it's going to be YouTube, it might be another site in 5 years. I mean, but I know I'm always gonna be making my own content. Like, once you realize the power and freedom of doing stuff yourself, you'll never stop. It's like being your own boss. It's brilliant.
Well, it's a pretty good deal. It's a really good deal.
I mean, people don't, I mean, I get a lot of people asking me, like, how do I get big on YouTube? And I'm like, they're like, it's just hard work. Like, some people hit it on the first one. Some it's 2 years. Some it's four. Like, look at the Fine Brothers. How many years was it for them before they blew up? Was it seven or whatever? Like, then now they're huge. Like, you can't, like, you have to put the work in. You know, I'm like, get a camera, learn to film, learn to edit. Like, you know, you got to put in the work. And then, you know, if you want anything, you just fight for it.
Well, we appreciate hearing your story of fighting for it and the success you've had.
Aww.
Thanks for this time that you spent with us. Grab the Sharpie. You got to sign the table.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you describe it, like, as I'm signing it, or how do we do this? Because this is, they're listening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you should go over that direction. There's some good real estate for you.
Some new territory
like
over
this.
Here.
I'm going to put a heart.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to put BLT.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that was our Ear Biscuit with Brittany Louise Taylor.
Thank you to Brittany for sharing her story. You know, the thing that struck me was her sheer tenacity in creating her YouTube presence, how she had something on the live streaming platform. And interestingly enough, she had pre-taped segments. That was, you know, it was very YouTube-ish to do that, to take a live platform, but to have these edited pieces. And so she actually used something that was made for YouTube and did it somewhere else, which was made more for live streaming.
Well, and also going back 8 or 9 years, and doing anything that had hundreds of thousands of people that, who were interested in it, that is just unheard of. I haven't ever talked to anyone who had that kind of success that long ago.
And then it was shut down, and she had to basically start over on the YouTube platform, and she did it in the tenacious way that she did it. First of all, she did it in character, but then she stayed in character in the comments. Like, I had totally forgotten that she had commented on her channel, man.
And now,
but
I remember that vividly. I do remember it.
Like, I mean, I interpreted her character as being a stalker, like someone who's a little too into what we were doing to reply to. I was a little concerned, but she was in character.
Yeah,
that was the great
right.
thing about it. And she commented on everybody that commented on her video.
And watching 50,000 videos in her first year on YouTube. I mean, the thing that is really significant to me is that you've got people who kind of just stumble into it. You know, we talked to Glozell where she makes the initial video that is sort of an accidental viral video, and then then her career becomes about, well, building upon that moment, you know, and it becomes a successful YouTube career. And then you got somebody like Brittany who just basically willed it into being. And, you know, and I know there's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of people listening, a lot of people, you know, in that, now that this is a thing that you can do, who they want to do it, and you just see that, well, it might be a whole lot of work. You know, it's definitely,
well,
that's one
know.
Of the paths.
Yeah, I don't know that Brittany would say you should reply to every person who comments on your videos, but hey, you know, that's one way to do it. I don't think she's capable of doing that now with the you know, the quantity of comments on her channel. I'm sure she doesn't. She's not able to do that now, but she still maintains that personal connection that, I mean, she was able to tell us about. So, again, it's great to get the perspective on how she has made it to the place where she is. And we look forward to, you know, this narrative series that she's talking about. It seems like we got a little bit of the scoop on that. So that's good. That's what an ear biscuit will give you.
The scoop?
It'll give you the scoop. It'll give you an understanding. It'll help you understand somebody. Now, when we watch her videos, or when you watch her video, you're going to understand more of the girl from Arizona.
Maybe we should have called this podcast The Scoop. That's what I'm thinking.
It sounds
right now.
Like it makes me think of cat litter, you know?
How about ice cream?
Or ice cream.
The Scoop.
Kitty litter ice cream. Now that's something to think about.
You never had a cat? Why do you think about a kitty litter with scoop?
I had a cat for a little bit, if we really want to go into this. I had a calico kitten that I slept slept on my
worms.
Pillow, and
it
then
got
worms and we got rid of it.
We don't want to talk about that. Let's not
talk
about
it. I didn't kill
that.
It. We just gave it back.
Gave it back to its mom?
We'll get into this later, Rhett. Thank you for listening to this Ear Biscuit. We do it every week. We have capacity for you to invite your friends to listen via the SoundCloud or the iTunes.
And please do that. Keep listening. Keep inviting. Use both ears. And we'll keep broadcasting in mono. You keep listening in stereo.
We will reply to your comments individually.
Next week, Link's going to be in your left ear, and I'm going to be in your right ear. Well, we'll talk about that. Maybe not.
Well, it's possible.
Yeah.
We could. I mean, technically, we could do that.
I'm going to try to make it happen. See you next week. Or you hear us next week. Something like that.
Man, you're falling apart.
Bye.